This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Melt. Melt, I say.
Not a very nice way to greet me.
Well, it's, I've been doing my Wizard of Oz cosplay, so I'm a flying monkey. Hey, it's Matt. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday here. Matt and Brett here today. How are you today, Brett?
I'm doing all right. I like this warm weather out here. It is melting, yeah.
I went out. We hiked a little bit of the 9 Mile Creek Trail today, and yeah, boy, was that nice. Holy cow, is that, and it was earlier too. I mean, it's just nice, and you just see the insane amount of the of water just melting, and just brilliant. I love this. I love it. So I hope you're out. I hope you're able to get outside and enjoy this. And the good news is I saw Sven's weather forecast. I might have to see if I can get Sven back on tomorrow. Saw Sven's weather forecast today for bringing me the news. Outside, it looks like Sunday and Monday, it's going to be below freezing as highs. But then, really, the rest of the forecast, we're in the high 30s and 40s.
Well, it's March, kind of about that time where we normally get that, and then the snowstorms that usually follow.
Oh, I was watching the History Guy, and I featured the History Guy a few times on the Friday link on Progressive Citizen X. The History Guy told the story of the 1880-81 winter. Holy cripes, was that a rough one. Earliest blizzard, I think, on record, which was October 16th. Then they had a blizzard in November. Then they had a blizzard on Christmas. Then on the, what would be the 59 days of January and February, it snowed, I think he said, outside of 17 days in that entire stretch, it snowed every other day. They had a blizzard in March. They had a blizzard in April. And they had places in South Dakota that weren't, they couldn't get to train till June. So, we think we know what cold is. We don't. I mean, it is truly remarkable what weathers and winters used to be like here. And then, of course, there's the blizzard of 1888, which, I mean, was thousands of people that killed or hundreds of people that killed out on the East Coast.
1880-81, wasn't that about the time where one of the big volcanoes erupted around the world? Because I know that usually does affect the weather for a year or two.
I thought Krakatoa was after that. I think Krakatoa was after that. I mean, I know what you're talking about, but I think that was after that. But no, 88, that's when they'd find bodies in the snowbanks. It was a Sunday and people were still going to work. How insane is that?
Oh, give us time. We'll catch up. Oh, yeah. That era again.
Welcome to Texas. 9-5. I'm sorry that mocking Texas laugh was uncalled for. I apologize. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to start off. You want the coolest thing I saw today? This was cool. So I had to go get service over at Rudy Luther Toyota. I don't know if you've heard of these up and comers there. They're just a fine group. You will pry my Sienna from my cold dead hands. That's how I'm going to have a Sienna for the rest of my life. I love the Siennas, but they've got all the great vehicles over there. You should go check them out. I went and got some service done. You drive in and the guy, I go to the get there and the guy says, well, come on over here. We'll get you all signed in and checked in and all this stuff. The routine maintenance and. Also got some brakes done, very nicely done, great price too. And the guy says, well, just to let you know, we checked your tires and your the balance, and we don't need to rotate them. They're all looking good. I'm like, when did you guys do that? And he pointed to the entrance of the garage. So, Brett, and I know you're always looking out for the shoplifter things at the store entrances.
Oh, I am.
I know you're always looking out for those. Where
always
those,
up for the five-finger discount.
Which store doors have those? But you know what I'm talking about. You go walk in a store, and they have those things on the side where if you take one of the tags through, ding, 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 you've been caught. Well, that's kind of what they've got, only – as you drive in, it activates lasers and it analyzes your tires and the balance and need of a rotation. It does it all automatically as you drove in. How cool is that?
That is impressive.
And the guy right away. Here's the best part: is the guy said, "Well, the computer told us you're perfectly fine." You don't have to ask the question. Okay, fine, we're done.
Well, and oftentimes people think, well, are they just telling me that if you don't know a lot about cars just because they want to get a few extra bucks out of me for
the computer does it now. Yeah, exactly. You'll know for sure. It's not the objectiveness of an individual. It's a computer saying, oh, nope, this needs to be done. And what's amazing is, you think to yourself after winter, oh, I must have to probably get these rebalanced and this because you always spin your tires and stuff on one. No, my tires are fine. Computer says it. You can't. Oh, that is that. Okay, that's kind of the cool technology that we're supposed to have here. The way we were supposed, as opposed to stop making chip flavors, for God's sakes. We're done. We don't need any more. You've only given us 5 zillion to eat. But this is technology this is the future as it should be. So, Rudy Luther Toyota. Go check it out. Take your vehicle in there. Let the laser scan your car.
Yeah, my car's not from Rudy Luther Toyota, but they'll have to service. Go there. Yeah,
they'll do your service. Go to get their service done. You don't need to do that. And if you want, you can trade in a vehicle there. They'll obviously take it there as well. But you don't need to have a car from Rudy Luther. Go check that out because that is as cool as it gets. That is seriously. I like that. And by the way, I it does not give you a body mass index. I tried it. And they said, sir, can you please come away? I just was seeing what the lasers would tell me.
Walk through. Oh, your knee's not looking too good. Got to get your shoulder replaced.
It's like a 1979 planetarium. Tonight, it's Laser Night Ranger. No, my youth is coming back to me. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want to share two personal stories to begin with. And one actually ties into a story that's been followed here in the Twin Cities media. And to give you a little background, I don't know if the last time I talked about this. So my first radio gig was Armed Forces Radio Network in Nuremberg, Germany. That's right. I was in the Army. I know. Anywho, so I was in the Army and I was, because I, my MOS, the job that I had at that point, went away. I basically got attached to the Armed Forces Radio Network. So I was a radio DJ in Nuremberg. And by the way, I had the largest audience I'll ever have in my entire life. I mean, seriously, it was something like 20 million, 25 million listeners in that area. Yeah. Yeah. And I was the first American DJ to play Smells Like Teen Spirits from Nirvana there. They were not wanting us to play it. And when I said, finally, it's a top 40 song, we got to play it. And I played it. And of course, every German is, was ist das? Sehr gut, fantastic, wunderbar. And that is actually a real story, true story of the how they spoke to me, and I don't know why, but I did that. That was Armed Forces Radio Network. Came back here, went to the Mighty Brown Institute, tried their bait program, and if you are thinking about getting into the bait in business, oh, they'll teach you about night crawlers. Sorry, Brown. Sorry. Sorry.
I'm from there too.
Did you get the? I got a bachelor's in bait.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my associates was in broadcasting. So I went to Brown, came out, went to WGEZ or as Woodgees in Beloit, Wisconsin. Worked there for a bit, went to KDAO in Eldora, Iowa. After that, I went to KKBJ in Bemidji, Minnesota, and froze my caboose up there for a winter. I'm not going back there. I'm personal business. But then my wife and I got married, and we needed to be near a major city, so we went to – and I know the word major is doing a lot of heavy lifting when you say Des Moines, but it was a larger metro area. She was able to get a job and work in her career field. And so I went down. I was in Ames, Iowa at KASI-KCCQ. Of course, back after that, and I'll get back to KASI-KCCQ here in a second, but – after that, I was Metro Traffic here. I did post-game Twins over at the Hubbard properties. Did some stuff for the Clear Channel guys in 10 years, over 10, well, now 11 years. 11 years ago, I came here to this radio station, and if they ever catch me, I'm gone. But still, I mean, I'm pretty spry. I oil myself up every day. The security can't catch me here. It's like a pig. And I stay here as long as I can. Going back to Ames, Iowa, I did mornings down there at Hot 105 KCCQ, which is a top 40 station. Yeah, I used to do top 40 mornings. And then I also got my first radio talk show, which was called Matt and Moore After 4 on KASI, which was the flagship for the Cyclones, a radio station for the Iowa State Cyclones. We did a lot of stuff out of there. And I did, I mean, obviously, and today it's a little bit different. I mean, Ames and Des Moines are becoming much more of one metro area, and it was getting pretty close anyway. Ankeny is the town in between them, and that's getting pretty built up. But, you know, so it's kind of one whole metro corridor starting at Ames and heading south from there. But you really were kind of in the Ames community. And so, I mean, Iowa State was a big part of what, you know, we did. I mean, we do all the events over there. We do all the games. We do the pregame and the postgame, the tailgating for the football, they had a hockey team down there. We'd even do stuff like that with Al Murdoch, the coach down there. He was a great guy. The reason I'm bringing all this up is there's a story it's a very sad story. The death last month in Iowa, 21-year-old daughter of Minnesota State Supreme Court Justice Margaret Chudich and Alina Health CEO Penny Wheeler was attributed to excessive drinking and exposure to the cold, authorities said Wednesday. Police in Ames located the body of Iowa State University student Olivia Chudich late in the morning on January 22nd, the parking lot behind her Delta 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 sorority house. Results of an autopsy determined that Olivia suffered an accidental death caused by acute alcohol intoxication and hypothermia. Read a statement from the Ames Police Department. Police have said there's no evidence of foul play found at the scene. However, they still want to hear from anyone who might have had information on the death. A sad story. In an online obituary, her parents wrote that Olivia was born in Guatemala, coming to our lives as an infant. She was loved from the moment that we set our eyes on her, and deeply so thoughtfully her too short life, her vibrant spirit, heart on sleeve emotions, kindness, compassion, and glorious smile are remembered by all who crossed her path. Why am I bringing up my history and this? Iowa State's got a problem. Now, I really enjoyed Iowa State. I did. I enjoyed being down there. I was down there. I moved down there when I was 28 years old and worked there for a few years till I came back up here to Minneapolis and started having kids. And I saw a lot of great basketball games. They had the theater. The concerts would come through. It was a nice place. Hilton Coliseum was always nice to catch things. And Jack Trice Stadium, they'd have the big concerts that come through there. But Iowa State always had a problem with alcohol consumption on that campus. I think it's a fine institution. I think that the kids that come out of there generally are pretty smart. The engineering program is pretty good. There's no way on the planet I would ever allow one of my children to go down to Iowa State, because there is a culture of alcohol at that school which I have never seen anywhere else. And now, once again, I'm talking about 20-plus years ago. And I know they've had other problems at that university since I have left. I mean, there were times I was 28 years old. I wasn't exactly kind of into the family and the house and having kids at that point. I was still going out and partying, and there were times I would look around at what was going on at that campus, and I'm like, my God, there are some drunk people here. Holy cow. I mean, they would put the military to shame. And trust me, I saw some drinkers in the military. Holy cow. There's a culture that existed back then. And the fact that you have someone who is drinking so much, part of a sorority, drinking so much, and actually dies in the parking lot of her sorority house, that's a problem. And this is once again my my feeling is going to be is that they still are having an insane alcohol problem on that campus. Where I mean, I would go do events with the radio stations. I'd go do events down there at, you know, 9 in the morning, 10 in the morning, and not only would there be stumbling drunk kids coming back from a night that at that point, but there would be people up and that were part of the events that were clearly still schnockered. And they've had, of course, they have Visha, which down there is their big event, and they have fundraising and all this stuff, and they do a lot of good with that. But more years than not, they have troubles down there with, you know, out of control crowds, drunken mobs. It is not pretty. And I don't know what the cause is. I don't know if it's this kind of Iowa-based inferiority complex. I don't know if it is because they're always, you know, the second fiddle, well, the third fiddle, really, if you want to know the truth. Iowa State's the third fiddle in that state behind the University of Iowa and Drake. Sometimes it's the fourth fiddle if you and I just doing better in basketball. But the reality is that we are seeing, you know, I think if you are having kids, if your kids are going to go to college, if you are going to send your kids, especially someplace you don't know, you need to find out what kind of school they're going to. And don't get me wrong, I'm not sending my kid to a, you know, an Oral Roberts U or, you know, some, you know, Brigham Young where there's no alcohol on campus and there are very strict moral codes. No, no, no. My kids are going to the U of M. And don't get me wrong. I mean, there are kids that get drunk and schnockered at the U of M and do stupid stuff. Of course, obviously, all the time. But it's not like this was different. This was very different. And when I was back then, this was back in the old Big 12 conference, and we'd go around into other colleges, and I never saw anything like that. I never saw, you know, the tailgating before the football games. I mean, they put the Green Bay Packer fans to shame. There's that much drinking. There's that much just unbelievable schnockered people. I don't know if they've been able to clean up the university, but this story here is scary. It is scary because it reminds me of my time down there. It reminds me of the stories I hear from friends who are still down there that college, that university seems to have a really big alcohol problem. And no matter what they try to do, they don't seem to be able to get away from it. And here yet is another story that might not be a synopsis of what's going on in the entire college. But here is yet another story of a child at Iowa State University. And I call him a child. I'm 52 years old. They're a child at Iowa State University and a problem with alcohol. Know what you're sending your kids into. That's all I'm going to say. Know what you're sending your kids into, please. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Another story when I do come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein's going to be joining us here in just a moment. Ann is in Minneapolis. She wanted to chime in a little bit on ISU. Welcome on in.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Well, anyways, I was listening to you, and I was like, wow, because we were down in Ames for a long time. My husband was actually down there like 83 to 97, mm-hmm. and I was down there for a good chunk of it. He did his PhD and then stayed and also taught at Drake. Wow, obviously, I was down there as a married person, so I wasn't part of the Greek system, even though my undergrad's from Iowa State. And yeah, that place is wild, and it still is in a lot of ways. And believe me, Bisha, I don't know when you got down there, but that chilled out a lot. They really cranked back. I don't understand the Greek system down there at all. Not that they're the only drinkers, not totally dumping on them, but they still have a problem because we get down there a lot because we're really tied to one of the sports down there. So, yeah. Al Murdock, great guy.
Al Murdock is an amazing guy. Amazing guy. But, Anne, can I ask you one question about this?
Sure.
So I know Visha, they toned it down because they were having problems. And that, once again, that was working right. through the Greek system there. But Welsh Avenue, they always had troubles down there. Yeah. They're still having those problems then?
I think they really are, because we were actually down there even when they jacked up the drinking age to 21, and that did nothing. they did. It was much harder to drink for the people who are under 21. I was actually part of a really big sports club down there, and, you know, we occasionally had underage people with us. But that being said, it's just so much a part of the culture.
It is.
And I guess I was part of that, too. I'm not trying to say, you know, oh, they're such terrible people, but it's, I've been on other campuses. I have gone to school elsewhere, and nothing like it is at ISU. My husband did his undergrad up here at the U, and, you know, that's not exactly
timid,
cloistered environment.
Yeah, but it's nothing. It's nothing compared to. I've never seen it. It literally is. Thanks, Anne. I appreciate it. The comparison is I've been to the tailgating at the Packers, and that was about it. I think even ISU was worse than that, and it's a culture thing down there. And it's wrong. And like I said, there were tons of incidents when I was down there, when I worked down there for 97 to 2000. And I know of other incidents that have happened, and they've tried to rein stuff in. But the reality is that is a place where they just it's a drinking school.
Does it normally make those lists that list like the top whatever party schools? I know they've done those, and usually it's like Wisconsin and others on there. I wonder if Iowa State's been part of that.
They've not really, but you see, I don't know if it's necessarily a party environment. It's just a drinking environment. There's nobody to it. It's just drinking. I had an enjoyable time down there but I wasn't part of that culture. I did a lot of fun things. I think we did a lot of good things when I was working down there, but at the same time, I would not allow my kid to go to that college. I wouldn't. I just wouldn't. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, I won't have time to get into this next story. I'll have to say that for a little later if I have time to get to it, because Jeff Stein, speaking of Iowa, Jeff Stein, our Iowa politics expert, he'll be joining us when we do return. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. He's a noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is the daily show he does down there. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
Matt, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. We were just talking. We had, of course, the story of the Minnesota State Supreme Court Justice's daughter that passed away at Iowa State. And I was talking about, you know, my time at Iowa State and from what the stories I've heard since I left, you know, that is a university that has a problem with alcohol. And the fact is that the student died of excessive drinking and exposure to the cold. You know, it reminds me of the stories when I was down there in Ames at KSI and KCCQ, and we, you know, there was always every weekend just, you know, stories of drunk kids that was more reminiscent of a major metro area, not Ames, Iowa. And yet, you know, they've tried to stop it, but they don't seem to be able to.
Well, and what is sad about this case, the supposition is that she was out socializing. She was of age, came home, and it was probably late at night after the bars closed and the doors to the sorority were locked, and she didn't have her key and couldn't raise anybody. Presumably she had a phone, couldn't raise anybody inside. And the temperatures were quite cold. I mean, it's a tragic situation, but that kind of a situation I just outlined wouldn't be a shock. But it is tremendously tragic in this era of communication on your person at all times. There's nothing sinister that's being suspected, no foul play.
Nothing like that, no. Nope.
But it, again, it is just tragic. And, you know, there was a similar situation at the University of Iowa last year where it was a very cold night. They had locked the dorms, and there was a young man who had been studying at, I think, the student union, and then couldn't get into the dorm and then froze to death. I mean, it's just tremendously sad and tragic.
Why? Okay, so at the University of Minnesota, I was just over there a few weeks ago. My son's over there. And every about 20 feet is one of those emergency call stations where you pick up the phone. It's the police, and it's not that's not something to Minneapolis. I think Iowa's got those. University of Iowa's got those. Most of the major Big Ten universities do. That's the thing. Once you realize you might be in trouble here, why aren't something like that more prevalent in Iowa State?
Well, and there are a couple of things. One, the fact that you have a son at the university is enough to make me just spin in my chair.
Yeah.
Holy.
Yeah, really.
That little boy is now at the U of M. Okay,
yeah.
Well, I think the issue with Iowa City, with the young man I mentioned, he was a freshman, and it may have been his first semester or early in his second, and just may not have been oriented to where emergency help is, although, again, in this day and age, you find that surprising. The Iowa State situation, this is a young woman who went to her sorority house, which is in essence, a residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's not on campus. And so, yes, you can have all the emergency phones you want strategically placed on the campus, and they do, but there are just these other situations. You can't have it in a residential area, although, again, I don't know the full circumstances. I don't think any of us do. But it's just tragic that, again, in this day and age where kids have phones and they're sending messages and texting and doing all manner of things at all hours in the day and night, how someone cannot get help is just staggering to me. Even if it's, in the Iowa City situation, there was no alcohol involved. You just want to say, you know, why doesn't the kid hit 911? I can understand if you're slightly impaired and you're worried about getting police involved, but if it's that or dying, you might think of it. But again, I'm not about to second guess, but we can't account for everything, and we just have to use it as a lesson to others to say, okay, this can happen to even the best of kids in the best of circumstances, and you need to be proactive about taking care of yourself.
Reminded me, just opened up a lot of wounds about all the alcohol problems they had down at Iowa State when I was down there in the years after that. Let's move on to actually the January 6th hearing that happened yesterday, mm-hmm. the beginning of which happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the committee got there. And I mean, I think once again, you're looking at all elements of this, and there seemed to be a heavy element in the first day of the communication problems between the interagencies. I mean, this is something very similar to what, remember, after 9/11, realizing the communication problems that a lot of the agencies, specifically in New York City, had trying to talk with each other. Here was a case of what's the process, and, you know, the FBI dropping off a memo the day before but never getting up to the people that needed to see it, that sort of thing. There clearly were some problems, but there also was a... You know, I'm going to call out two of the Republican senators that were questioned, because there really was some nefarious, you know, maneuvers going on here that were trying to phrase this and frame what happened on January 6th as something else. I'll start with Hawley, Senator Hawley from Missouri, you know, or the one of the guys that instigated this. That picture will never go away for him. He might as well just admit that he's not going to run again. I don't think he'd even win in Missouri at this point. But
and remind people, the photo was of what? Because this is important.
This photo was him walking into the Capitol, looking down on the mob of people, and he raised his fist in the air in a show of support with the soon-to-be terrorists storming the Capitol. A disturbing picture, to say the least.
That's why I say it's important to really flesh that out for people, because I don't know what was in his mind at that moment other than trying to capitalize on what he thought would be a politically advantageous situation,
but
which therefore makes him a politician. Okay.
So. It's, you know, it definitely is. That's not going to ever go away. He wanted to be infamous. He wanted to be known for that. Well, he will be. His line of questioning, where he clearly was pointing to the law enforcement agencies at the Capitol as the instigators or at least co-instigators of this, that was disgusting. Your thoughts on his attempt there to basically shift blame from the unruly mob that stormed the Capitol to the police officers who were being beaten. One was being killed by this mob, but these officers were being beaten, that they somehow were responsible for the treatment that they got.
I would have a lot more respect for the argument if it was an attempt to deflect blame from police and put it on those who did not inform police or mobilize police. In other words, you're hearing certain Republicans saying, well, what did Mitch McConnell know? And when did he know it? What did Nancy Pelosi know? All of this to suggest that there were other people. In other words, if you want to support the police, you can say, hey, rank and file police people, not your fault because the intelligence didn't get through. You weren't trained for the situation. There are many ways to play this, but going after the police officers themselves as co-conspirators, I don't see what you're trying to gain by that. I don't see that you're gaining with any base. I don't see that you're being consistent with prior statements. It seemed like a very odd way to go for someone who has previously run on the platform upon which he has run.
You're exactly right. I mean, your argument could be, where's the failure within the military's calling up of the National Guard? Should there be a red line to the mayor of D.C.? Should, you know, was there a failure by Mitch McConnell or Nancy Pelosi to make that call? Did they know they needed to make that call and they couldn't? Or, you know, and looking at it from, did Trump outright refuse to call in the National Guard? I mean, these are all legitimate questions to ask. But for Hawley to go on out there and really point at the police, like, you know, how dare you basically defend yourselves? You are the ones that made them mad. When they started punching you, you should have just let them, as opposed to basically you instigated it by trying to defend yourselves. I mean, that really is a disturbing path of thought. I mean, and maybe just Hawley's just that, not, he's just that stupid. Maybe he really is just this stupid.
I have absolutely no problem with him on January 6th maintaining his position of challenging the Electoral College votes. A lot of people have said, well, you know, given what happened at the Capitol, he should have just folded. You know, fine. You know, do your parliamentary procedure, have your little discussion, have your vote. That's fine. Okay. I mean, at least it's a consistent path. This is not even what you've just described accurately, Matt, is not doubling down. It's coming up with a whole new line of crazy. And it, you know, again, it's one thing if he wants to maintain his thought about elections being stolen, if he wants to maintain, you know, that kind of tact. But I really don't see how, first of all, just in common decency, but let's just go with craven political thinking. I don't see how that's going to appeal to any base that he either currently has or would want to see. I don't know how you blame the officers for their own activities. I also believe that this entire thing had enough different tentacles and tangents, et cetera, that anyone who tries to paint with a broad brush is wrong. There are so many failures of the system here and so many people who could have done something. That is what's worthy of study. But to blame the line officers themselves? Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, I cannot see. Absent some other evidence that no one has presented, I just don't see how that is worthy of a United States senator in a formal hearing.
He was not nearly the worst senator, though, yesterday. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin gets that title. To read off of a hack piece which blamed Antifa and the police for the real, they were the real problem. It wasn't Trump supporters. They were there just to have, you know, it was a party atmosphere, like, I guess, Mardi Gras or something. And it was the police when they basically dared fire tear gas, well, or defend themselves, that they made the crowd mad and they were justified in being mad. But the entire argument that somehow Antifa was there, as the point I made yesterday, It's pretty amazing considering the image that the Republicans have spent over the last 2 years of developing what they want people to think of when they think of Antifa, this kind of dope-smoking, moving fish concert with a lot of minorities and skateboards, and that's what they want to think. But now all of a sudden their argument is, no, Antifa's a bunch of mostly white, mostly male, 30 to 60-year-olds decked out in Trump gear that were so committed to this that they posted pro-Trump messages as they were doing it. All the way through and claiming they were pro-Trump guys, even the next day. I mean, the delusion here is just astounding by Ron Johnson.
Well, first of all, you forgot wearing tie-dye T-shirts.
Oh, yes.
I mean, in the description. Okay, a few things about Ron Johnson. I'm looking at my screen here at New York Magazine's website, and they have a category called The Intelligencer. I don't know how often you. Here is the caption of a photo under Ron Johnson as they talk about this. Quote, Ron Johnson was a boring fiscal hawk until he discovered the joy of conspiracy theories. Unquote. And I can recall, I mean, Johnson has an above average lust for power. And that's saying something in the United States Senate. But if you recall the history, he was first elected. He beat Russ Feingold in 2010. Okay, 2010. Fast forward to 2011. I'm at the Iowa State Fair in Des Moines, and he is there with an aide prowling around the fairgrounds. Why would a brand new United States senator from Wisconsin come to see the Iowa State Fair? Here's a hint. It wasn't for the butter cow.
Wow. It is a fine butter cow, though. It is. I mean, you really can't pass up on
this butter cow. The woman who sculpted it for, you know, 50 some years is from my hometown. Oh, no, no. Butter cow is sacred where I come from. But here's Johnson, you know, sniffing around talk shows and the whole bit. And no one paid him any attention. He showed up all full of himself in a, you know, nice, crisp white dress shirt and tie. And he's going to talk to Iowans, and no one gave him the time of day. But why are you there unless you think, you know, I'm pretty hot stuff. I bet someday I could be president. All right. He hasn't lost that desire. He's up for reelection next year. So I haven't heard his name mentioned much with regard to presidential politics. But how crazy is it to think that he might just be saying, you know, if I can catch some fire with this, this is my ticket to a better street address. And so this is what's really creatively ridiculous about all of this, is that they're not asking questions. They're advancing models and theories designed to see how many clicks they get on social media. And that is not going to serve anyone's purpose, including their own ultimately. But we have some really serious issues that should be ferreted out, discussed, evaluated, and studied with regard to the failures of the system that day. And we're not going to get that when you've got this kind of grandstanding. And that's really all that it is. It's speechifying and grandstanding.
Well, and Johnson, I think, feels as if this is a winning strategy. And don't get me wrong, especially in Northwestern Wisconsin, I know they're probably drinking this up because that's kind of what they like up there. They like that far-right extremism. But the reality is you're not reading the room, because there's a lot of Republicans, especially the moderate Republicans or what's left of them, who are leaving the party in droves because they are so angry about what happened on the 6th of September that for you, you're not going to resonate. This is not going to get you, I think, the votes he thinks it is in Wisconsin. And as you said, I mean, if these guys got delusions of grandeur, well, you still got to win your Senate race in 2022, and you getting stomped by 10 points because you basically are trying to convince people that a bunch of middle-aged white guys dressed up in Trump gear from top to bottom were really some sort of secret crack Antifa unit that basically had been in, that had been planning this for 10 years, because that's what their social media timelines have been talking about far-right politics for 10 years. You know, come on. And I think that this is just, once again, I'm really getting the idea of, wow, Ron Johnson is really not that smart, is he? And your story backs that up, too. I mean, how delusional are you to go down to Iowa for, you think you're going to be running for president a year after you got nominated in Wisconsin, for goodness sakes?
Well, and again, you know, I like to think that I'm kind of connected and know some of this. And I'm sitting there because I was at a radio studio. I was hawking a book at the time. And so here comes this guy with his minion. And I'm going, I have no idea who you are. I have not a clue in the world who you are. But again, you better, you know, get a pork chop on the stick on your way out so you make it worth your trip, because otherwise this is a waste of your time. All right, let me pose another conspiracy hypothesis for you.
Okay.
Let's say Ron Johnson has not said he's running next year. Is this an audition for Donald Trump? And here's where I'm going with this. Trump is trying to become kingmaker. Kristi Noem is up for re-election as South Dakota governor next year, and he is hosting a fundraiser for her at Mar-a-Lago. There have been others. I believe Ron DeSantis made a pilgrimage to Mar-a-Lago. Nikki Haley, when she dared say some things against him, and then when she tried to cover and ask for a meeting, she got the door right in her face. He will not take a meeting with her. How much of this is Johnson either saying, I need Trump to do a fancy fundraiser so I can afford my Senate race, or Trump's not going to run again, and I want to be the anointed one. And again, if my guess about Senator Johnson having this lust for power is correct, do you put it past him to say, I'm going to double down on this, because then Trump's going to say, I'm the next great hope for the Make America Great group?
I'll tell you what. We'll think about this. We're going to come on back. I'm going to put out a point on this that might clarify where Trump thinks he's at. And then also we have to discuss the fact that his taxes are now fair game. Jeff Stein joining us right now, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us with his usual visit each week. Jeff, I don't think Kristi Noem's going to win the nomination. I mean, the legacy of South Dakota and coronavirus is not going to be a question she's going to be able to answer. And so she's, you know, having the bad case count there. And, I think especially after Joe Biden is showing that people, you know, by caring about the American people, you kind of endear yourself to the American people, having this come back saying, well, you're going to just die and I'm happy with that. I don't know if that's going to work. But a more logical test to your argument about Trump's coattails. I still think Mike Lindell, who was just sued by Dominion for $1.3 billion, I still think he is going to run for governor of Minnesota. And without a doubt in my mind, he is the most loyal of loyal Trump supporters there is. Without a doubt in my mind, Trump will throw his entire weight behind him. I think he's got no chance even in the state of Minnesota. But that's going to be, I think, his real test is going to be 2022. Not so much who he anoints for 2024, but if he gets behind people in 2022, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Laura Boebert, and they can somehow re-win their seats, and then get something like a Mike Lindell who at least holds his own in Minnesota. I don't know how much the party is going to listen to him in 2024 if he can't deliver in 2022. You there, Jeff?
Yeah, we have him on the line, but we're not hearing him.
Okay. Jeff is, maybe he's taking another call.
Yeah, I'll get him off the line here and check it out.
Thank you. Just check to see where he's at there and see what we got going on. It's a good question. I mean, it's just kind of one of those things where he has to, it's how much is he, the coattails as far as coattails go. I mean, how much is he got as far as coattails? And I mean, that's something that you can only, understand when it comes into, 2022. Is he trying to call back again?
We have him now.
Hey, Jeff?
So I'm listening to a commercial, and then it just went silent. So I'm just here, just figuring I must have said something and gotten censored.
No, it's our meditation minute. Anyway, it's liberals.
Yeah, that's it.
But isn't the point here, if he can't deliver in 2022, and say Marjorie Taylor Greene, say that the Republicans don't win the House and they lose Senate seats, say that, he does endorse Mike Lindell and he gets laughed out of the Minnesota Senate, House, Governor's race. I mean, if he doesn't have coattails, doesn't that all of a sudden change the dynamic dramatically for 2024?
Oh, I think it does. I think it absolutely does, because there are already enough mainstream Republicans who are saying, now, wait a minute. Under Mr. Trump, we lost the House, we lost the Senate, and we lost the White House. Okay, yes, he won the White House in 2016, but from that election over Hillary, what have you seen? Lost the House in the midterms, lost the Senate as he lost re-election. So they're now making the case that this was a one-shot flash in the pan kind of a thing with absolutely no coattails, with no coat, much less no coattails. And so that's what's going to be interesting. So to me, I'm not sure if Johnson sniffs that he's not a shoo-in to win in 22, he'll just simply walk away to keep his powder dry and take a long run at 24. Because again, delusional.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that you look at Kristi Noem, if all of a sudden he doesn't deliver in 2022, you know, I know a lot of Republicans, I mean, you see the Minnesota Republican Party falling all over themselves to try to suck up to her at this point. There are a lot of people feeling as she's going to take Trump's mantle. But the reality is if Trump doesn't deliver and he becomes, and briefly, we don't have much time to get into this, but his tax returns, if that happens, then he becomes even more of a liability. Well, her chances, I think, are going to be even less than nil.
Well, she can, you know, keep it siloed to South Dakota and is apparently popular there. And again, we're a long ways from the actual election. But, you know, she's able to literally ride a horse in a rodeo and people think everything's good. Now, whether it blunts her attempt to move on to something different in 2024. See, I think there are a lot of these people who think, you know, I was good to Trump. I've stayed with him. I'll get the endorsement going forward if he doesn't run, and that's what everyone's waiting for. But Trump's not going to let anybody know that until 2023, for crying out loud.
Jeff Stein, once again, books at Next Chapter Books, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Have a good one.
Hour two up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us today. Hi, Brett.
Well, hello again there, Matt.
There is a new weapon of choice, apparently, for just the idiots. Well, first of all, So I'm watching a YouTube video. You know, I love those. I love woodworking. So I'm watching a woodworking video. And I actually was watching a woodworking video. It was amazing. But I had an ad on YouTube for a gun silencer.
What?
Yeah.
On YouTube?
On YouTube. It was an ad, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I mean, I said, okay, here's a guy. All you have to do is bore out the end of this, and it should work like a charm. And then the second guy comes on and goes, yeah, I can see this fitting on a 22. I'm like, whoa, that's a gun silencer. They're talking about adjusting something and turning it into a gun silencer. On
most
YouTube.
Most tech companies are pretty conscious about not airing controversial ads or content now.
Oh,
especially over the past few years. I'm shocked they would put that ad on there.
You got a social media company of some sort basically not putting their customers ahead of their own profit margins. Gee willikers. Yeah. Yeah, who would have ever seen that coming? I actually posted about it. I want YouTube to answer the question, what the hell do you think you're doing here? And maybe this just got passed, or they felt like it was, since it didn't really say it was a silencer for a gun, that it was okay. But I'm like, what in the world? Yeah, just adjusting the silencer. Yes, you're going to see if you can try to pull this up there?
I was more seeing if anyone else has been talking about this on Twitter.
You
can pull it up.
See, well, I don't know if you can. It's an ad.
That's true. So, yeah.
Needless to say, there are other weapons that the people are using today. An 18-year-old man has been arrested after he allegedly sprayed chemical irritant at employees in a McDonald's in Burnsville. The Burnsville Police Department tweeted on February 20th, McDonald's employees were assaulted by a customer with bear mace. Actually, for a while, I still think that this is, they're wondering if the police officer that died in the Capitol siege had a reaction to the bear mace that was sprayed at him. That was one of the things that we're looking at, if that was the case. Few other details have been released. Matt Smith with the Burnsville PT told Bring Me the News the case is still active. They're not releasing additional details yet. He did say the workers were sprayed by some sort of chemical irritant that caused a burning sensation in the eyes, nose, and mouth. In a statement to KSTP, McDonald's owner-operator Valerie Johnson said, "The safety and security of our employees is of utmost importance to us. We're thankful nobody was seriously injured and for law enforcement's swift response." The PD's tweet says Tuesday morning, the Brooklyn Park PD located the suspect, who Smith identified as Lazelle Cook of Minneapolis, and arrested him. Why would you do this? Seriously, is this some sort of prank? Is this like one of those people used to film themselves basically coming up behind someone and punching him in the face or something like that? And needless to say, he's got a citation for 3 counts of fifth-degree assault and prohibited person in possession of tear gas. So there's that. And then also Wilmer. Wilmer police say a fight at a busy intersection. Is this what, any which way was loose? Was there an orangutan there?
What kind of fight are we talking here?
It was at a busy intersection in Wilmer during rush hour yesterday. It appears to be stemmed from a road rage incident among people who knew each other. The fight occurred around 4:30 p.m. on a service road next to the intersection of Highway 12 and Lakeland Drive. 41-year-old father and his 19-year-old son, along with another 18-year-old, were arrested on suspicion of second-degree probable assault with dangerous weapons. According to the police report, a 22-year-old man who appears to be related to the 18-year-old was also issued a citation. The 41-year-old is facing a pending charge of liability for crime to others. 10 officers responded to the scene, records show. It certainly was a visible type of thing. Was Yakety Sax playing? We're glad that nothing worse came of it, that nobody received any grave injuries. Wilmer Police Chief Jim Felt told Lakeland Broadcasting, each of the men were treated for injuries caused by weapons, including a baseball bat, before taken to the custody, according to the police report. Sounds like it was a road rage incident between some people who knew each other. Other family members got involved, multiple cars involved. Yeah, you're all idiots. But, I mean, it sounds interesting. So during rush hour, if you were in Wilmer, all of a sudden you just looked out to the side and it looked like Russia had just busted out next to you. Just a massive brawl of people with bats. And here come 10 cops.
Police. And organized. I'm getting a picture in my head like a Fight Club scene where everyone's gathered in a circle watching these guys go at it in the middle of an intersection.
And one other thing I'm going to just say. All right, let me repeat the ages of the individuals involved.
Yeah.
See if you can figure out who I'm thinking might be the ringleader here, might be the person that started this. 18, 19, 22, 41. I think there's a 41-year-old loser in Wilmer who, he might have been the instigator on this.
I'm with you there.
How do you do that? A street brawl. And last time we had street brawl in the news was the Palin family up in Wasilla, Alaska. That was one of the greatest stories ever. The woman who ran for vice president and her entire family were in a drunken street brawl in Alaska. And what was the name of her son? Flint Slate. What was his name?
One syllable object. Is the word I think it was.
Actually, I think that was his name. One syllable object, Palin. What was his name?
It was like Brick or...
Brick or Nut. One syllable object, Palin. As Sarah, of course, the police get on the scene, and of course she's trying to do the, well, we're just here, we're glad the police officer's here. And meanwhile, her son is getting dragged shirtless into a police car with like a cop basically trying to jam him into the back of the car with his foot behind her. Oh,
our vice presidential nominee.
There you go. And you wonder how you got Trump. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So one of the big stories that's coming out here, and I tried to get Peter Callahan from the MinnPost to join us, but he wasn't available. The Monday, a handful of plaintiffs, including redistricting expert Peter Watson and former Ramsey County Elections Supervisor Joe Mansky, filed a lawsuit in state court arguing that Minnesota's current legislative and congressional districts are unconstitutional. The reason? They are no longer equal to the population. This is actually, they have a map with this Minpo story, which is pretty darn stunning. Because if you're the Republican Party, you've got to be looking at this map and just sort of saying to yourself, where in the world are we going to pick up votes? Because, so this is per House district, okay? It's per House district. The median population when these were the ideal population for each individual district. And once again, the goal is to have equal representation. Now, Republicans have tried multiple times. There have been suggestions that Minneapolis and St. Paul should be like one congressional seat because the issues in Minneapolis-St. Paul are different than the rest of the state. And people will point out, well, then you're going to have one congressional seat with like 1.5 million voters in it and other congressional seats with like 300,000. That's not equal representation. These districts are supposed to be relatively equal. The 2019 population, now this is once again a per Minnesota House district, says it should be somewhere in the area of 42,137 to 42,726. So that's where it should be, all right? The problem is that when you look at these House race districts now, pretty much every single one of them that's outstate falls way below that number. As a matter of fact, most of them are 4% off below the ideal population. That means that instead of 42,000, they're at 37 to 40,000. And once again, that's unequal representation, that fewer people, and this is not just one or two districts. This is the entire swath, for the most part, outside of Rochester, Mankato, and the extreme far southern suburbs of Minneapolis, the entire swath from South Dakota all the way to Wisconsin are Republican districts where their districts do not have nearly enough people to hold that seat the way it is. Everything north, really, of, I was going to say Cambridge, and this does include Duluth, which is kind of surprising, but Duluth must have been losing population, but all the Iron Range, a good chunk of the Iron Range, and a good chunk of mid-central Minnesota, those districts are not equal anymore. They're grossly been inflated. And in the northwestern part of the state as well, those districts are, once again, at least more than 4% below the ideal population rate. Meanwhile, where exactly are the districts now bursting with population? That instead of being 42,000, so some of these districts have between 44,000 and 47,000 people in it, which once again, you have Republican districts with, there are Republican districts with 37,000 people in it. There are Democratic districts with 47,000 people in it. That's a 10,000 voter difference. That's not an equal system. And we're talking House seats, Minnesota House seats. Minneapolis, St. Paul. I mean, right now, Minneapolis looks like it should probably pick up at least one more House seat. At least, maybe even two. St. Paul for sure. Actually, no. Minneapolis probably does need to pick up. The city of Minneapolis probably needs to pick up two more House seats. The city of St. Paul at least needs one. The suburbs around Minneapolis are grossly underrepresented in the Minnesota capital. And once again, let me explain that really quick. They're grossly underrepresented. That means there are far more people being represented by fewer representatives as opposed to rural Minnesota, where there are fewer people but more representatives. This is how you get basically an uneven system. But Moorhead, St. Cloud, and by the way, that's the St. Cloud district that's been leading Democrat more and more. Rochester, Mankato, and the entire metro area of the Twin Cities, almost all those districts are grossly underrepresented in the Minnesota House and what would also then be the Minnesota Senate. And so if you're a Republican and you're looking at this map, and I want to give Peter Callahan and the guys over at MinPost a lot of credit, this map should scare the living daylights out of the Republican Party, because this is going to end up, you are going to end up with this redistricting in court. And we have talked about how that it looks like, first of all, the redistricting is going to be late because we're not going to know if we've lost a U.S. congressional seat until probably August, September is likely. September is when we're likely going to know whether or not we lost a congressional seat, which really you can plan, but until you do lose that seat, you can't really kind of come forward with what your options are. But regardless of what happens with that seat, you're going to have to shift some of this representation from rural areas where there is 10,000 less voters in a House race than there are in the metro area. And the Republicans, I can already tell you, they're going to say, this map is fine. We shouldn't change anything. It's the big, bad metro. But the reality is this is going to be taken out of their hands. And that's kind of the point of this lawsuit, is that the Republicans are probably not going to do anything. Now, we also brought up yesterday the quirk in a Minnesota law that basically says if the districts are not in place by a certain point, then all of the U.S. House races become statewide races. And I can guarantee you the Republicans don't want that. Although, I thought about that a little bit, Brett. They might. They might just sort of sit there and they say, you know what, we'll take Tom Emmer, because Tom Emmer will win that seat again when the districts get put back in there in 2024. And Fischbach will win that seat again in 2024. We'll take 2 years of Democrats being there, but we're going to stick our heels in the ground and try our hardest to prevent what should happen just by math, which is they should be shifting these districts to where there are more districts in the metro area and the suburbs than there are out in rural Minnesota now.
I would think, too, keep in mind, they're members of the state legislature writing these maps. At the end of the day, they're going to want to save their own bacon and make sure that the maps stay the same for them so they can keep getting reelected. If they say, well, for 2 years, we'll have Democratic reps in the House under those at-large elections, I think they would go with that.
And here's another big problem with the Republicans is that if a judge is doing this, because judges don't like doing stuff like this. They don't. They prefer to not be there. So what's the judge going to do? The judge is going to say, give me a map where everyone has 42,000 votes. Every House member has got 42,000, Minnesota House member has 42,000 votes in their district, and we'll go with that map. And the Republicans, you already know the Republicans will try to do that Texas thing, that Ohio thing, where they connect two large liberal areas with 10 miles of interstate highway. And so, you know, you'll have like New Brighton connected to Eagan. And it's, oh, yeah. There you go. There's your district. They're going to try to do that sort of thing, but they're not going to be able to get away with it. And so you're going to see, I mean, this redistricting. I mean, and once again, you're just looking at numbers. And Republicans, as much as they want to, you know, scream, the judge is going to look and say, I'm not going to create a bunch of districts with 36, 37, 38,000 voters in it and leave Minneapolis and St. Paul with 47, 48, 49,000 voters in each one of their districts. That's not equal and fair representation. Look at Moorhead possibly pick up another seat. Look at Mankato pick up another seat. Look at Rochester probably pick up another seat. And then look at Minneapolis, St. Paul. I would say for the metro area, looking at the map they've got, which is, you know, once again, it's a, especially in the kind of tertiary suburb areas, which have been kind of leaning more Democrat anyway, my guess is you're going to see at least 10 more House seats in those areas. They're going to have to, which means if you put 10 more House seats in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Metro, if you put one more down in Rochester, you put one more down in Mankato, you put one more up in St. Cloud, and you take one out of, and add one more to Moorhead. So that gets you 14 seats. Say 14 House seats shift from reliably Republican areas to metro areas. That's, maybe this is what they might end up having to go with the statewide races, because the reality is they're getting more and more to a point in this state where if we have equal representation, they can't force Gazelka and Kurt Dowd can't force the rest of the state to gang up on Minneapolis, St. Paul. And by the way, I should be mentioning that, you know, you got Tom Bach, that jackass. I mean, former Democrat Tom Bach, my guess is his district is also way behind on the population. So my guess is it'd be great if we combined Tomasini's and Box District together. Have a nice day. Your buddy, you can look at them, well, you know, it's a up-and-coming organization, but we only have room for one, so good luck. This is an interesting map because, once again, what you're looking at here is the reality is that Republicans will try to argue that it's fair for rural Minnesota to have seats with up to 10,000 voters less than a metro area seat will. But no judge in the world is going to sign off on that. A judge is going to want every district to be within 1,000 votes. And if you do that, guess what? A lot of these seats are moving to the metro area.
Their only option is gerrymandering, and they can't with the DFL House and governor.
With a judge. And with a judge. Judge is not going to allow that. Judge is going to look at their map and say, no. We're not going to allow you to try to offset Hopkins by putting it with freaking Minnetrista out on the other side of Lake Minnetonka. We're not going to allow you to take Richfield and put it down with Farmington in a way to try to offset that liberal, you know, town. No, you're going to and I'm going to be blunt, in Minneapolis, they need to put two more House seats in there. They clearly have enough justification for two more House seats to be in the city of Minneapolis itself. You know all that building they've been doing downtown? There you go. Those are people buying houses, buying apartments. It's been working in Minneapolis, and boy, God, just I can't wait. I know Gazelka and Carnahan and Doubt are going to be screaming, how this is, that judge is jamming this map down our throat. Can't wait. Make sure you chew. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. You're more than welcome to comment. Like I said, go see the map. I'll post the story from MinPost a little bit later on with Peter Callahan. I'll post that story a little bit later so you can see that map yourself. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You know, Brett, you know another very interesting element about this map from MinPost? Well, once again, it's a map of districts which show the current districts, show that all the districts that are now basically under the population threshold to have that district stay intact, while it also shows the other districts who have gained population and where that we need to be adding more seats. And once again, spoiler alert, metro area needs to be picking up a heck of a lot of seats, while rural Minnesota is going to be losing a lot of seats. But what's fascinating is the most conservative part of the metro area is the north part, right? Those north districts there, from Stillwater heading on over towards, say, Monticello, right? All of those districts are basically still in the same population threshold. So they're not going to be picking it up. The only difference would be the district that's got Cambridge in it, which is, 32A? I think that's 32A. That one would pick up, that picked up a little size. But the reality is you are almost going to see completely here a shift of these seats from rural Minnesota into the metro core. And, I mean, it's not just Minneapolis. You got places like Robbinsdale, Crystal. They're going to pick up. Maple Grove is going to pick up seats. You've got Burnsville on the south side of the river here.
West Metro's got a ton, it looks like, too.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get out. You're definitely going to get around Lake Minnetonka, and that can be some conservative seats. They could do that. But once again, you got that seat, those Watertown seats and stuff like that, that you're going to have to merge in there somehow. This is the more I look at this map, the more it's like, wow, this is a nightmare for the Republicans. Because how are you going to convince a judge? How are you going to convince a judge that you need to go on out and say in, district, 24A or 30, or 2A or something like that? You need to keep that district intact, even though it's lost population, and not give that population to Minneapolis, which is right now, Minneapolis-St. Paul is grossly underrepresented in the Minnesota capital. It's not even close. So is Rochester. So is Mankato. So is St. Cloud. And so is Moorhead. All, for the most part, Democratic-leaning districts.
Well, how about that West Metro example you were talking about? Yeah, that Watertown seat, mm-hmm. It might still be Republican, but it's not going to be as Republican-leaning. That all of a sudden means that seat could be in play. it would be an uphill struggle, but it's in play for the DFL.
What you're actually the more shocking element of this map is you are going to have seats where right now, I mean, just when you get done with this map, you're going to have seats which are insanely reliable Republican seats, which next year, that when you just look at the head count in the House, are going to be instantly, you know, much more favorable. Well, right. They're going to be guaranteed Democratic seats. And for the Republicans, this is going to be the hill they're going to die on, because they're going to have to stop this from just, once again, it's not a trick. It's math. And that's why this map is so deadly, is it points out the current system grossly undervalues Minneapolis-St. Paul. Once again, Minneapolis itself, just the city of Minneapolis, should probably have two more House seats. And that would be another Senate seat as well in Minneapolis proper itself. And almost every solid Republican district. Wow, it's going to be interesting. You better pray that you get a Republican judge. But then once again, my guess is the Supreme Court will eventually be where this ends up, and get Minnesota Supreme Court where it ends up. Shay is in Minneapolis. Let's get Shay on in here before the break. Welcome on it.
Hi. I'm watching Rochester particularly. I think it's fascinating. That blue-leaning city looks like it was gerrymandered out of existence by cutting in half north and south and then attaching each half to huge urban or rural districts so that which were both won, 25 and 26, by Republicans by one percentage point. Now, Google says there are 116,000 in Rochester, and we know that's going to be up a lot. It looks to me like there's three clean Rochester seats there. If that will be allowed, and that's amazing.
Well, it is, and not only that, but that was at 25A, which borders on 25B there. That as well looks like it's going to pick up. You're going to have at least one more new House seat in Rochester. And how do you break up Rochester at that point then? My guess is the Republicans, and Shay, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. My guess is the Republicans are going to argue that most of Rochester should be in one House seat. But once again, what's the numbers here? What we're learning from MinnPost, it's got to be 42,000. Rochester's what, 100,000 people? It's something like that?
Yeah, I think she said like 116,000 and growing. That number's probably low.
You're not going to pull in Austin, Texas here, where you basically take, you know, and divide the city of Austin up into eight different sections and put them with far more right-wing sections. You are going to have at least two districts that are going to be guaranteed Democratic districts down there. Wow. I mean, the southwestern part of the state, they're going to lose at least two districts down there. And the Iron Range is probably going to end up losing as well, at least one or maybe two districts. And not just the Iron Range. I should come on down to kind of Tom Emmer's district as well, kind of north of St. Cloud in that area. Fishbach's going to lose at least one for Fishbach. And they're all going to go right into the Twin Cities core. Hey, Paul Gazelka, how'd that taste? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We're running late. Let's get a break in Minnesota coronavirus update. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Trig. Was it Trig Palin? Dolt? Was it Dolt?
My idea still works. One syllable objects.
Yeah, it is.
Dolt.
Dolt.
Trig.
Dolt Palin. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. It's good that some things are going into the past. Someone also wanted to make sure I mentioned that once again, we are hinging on the census. But here's the problem for the census, because once the census comes down, here's the problem for the Republican districts. This is a map that they just did from 2019's numbers, okay? Are you saying that all of a sudden you're going to see a dramatic increase in people moving out of the city and moving into these districts that's going to show up on the census? Remember, it's Donald Trump's not in charge of the census anymore. So any kind of number games that they're going to play are not going to work. So, yeah, no, this is Wow. And you put this in conjunction. A few weeks back, we talked about the votes in the suburbs. You know, where are the suburban districts that the Republicans are going to take that are going to help them win a statewide race? And they're not there anymore. Now, all of a sudden, not only are you not looking at them, but now you're looking at say that I'll undershoot what this MinnPost map tells me. Eight seats, four Senate seats, eight House seats move from reliably red districts to reliably blue districts. Well, what you just did there is you gave the Senate to the Democrats. The Minnesota Senate goes to the Democrats. And the Minnesota House becomes pretty much unattainable for the Republican Party. I mean, it would take a massive upset for them to be able to win back the Minnesota House. And let alone, once you look at the statewide races and the suburban mess that they've got for the Republican Party, you know, Minneapolis, Minnesota is starting to become more like Chicago, where basically, you know, the number, the volume of the people of the metro area offset the rest of the state. And I understand that in the rest of the state, you're not, you know, they might not like that. But I want to remind you of two things. First of all, you're taking our money. You don't put the same amount of money into the state coffers that you take out of it. We're subsidizing you anyway. And two, your jackass Republican House and Senate members here in St. Paul don't want to give Minneapolis any money and on turn want to take even more money from us. So screw you. 952-946-6205. Hey, you need better representation. And I'm sorry, if you think that after the way that Gazelka and Doubt, if we have to shift, like I said, I'm undercounting it too. Eight House seats and four Senate seats to the Democratic side. Yeah, you better learn how to start being nice again, you jerks. And you know, you better beg. You better pray that when the Democrats, with the census numbers, if this holds true, you better pray that the Democrats don't pass that you can only spend what your county takes in rule, because every one of your districts then just lost a ton of infrastructure spending. While Minneapolis, St. Paul, who you guys have basically been taking our money and not even wanting us to allow us having our money back when we need it, well, we'll be fine. So thanks. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Minnesota received $3 million from the federal government to operate its three community COVID-19 vaccination sites. The Federal Emergency Management Agency approved the funding as part of the federal disaster declaration that was issued near the beginning of the COVID-19 crisis last year. The money will also be used to offset state spending on the Vaccine Connector website and the call center. State health officials estimate that the COVID-19 vaccination efforts will cost $167.8 million. This year, that includes the state-sponsored community vaccination sites in Duluth, Minneapolis, and Rochester, as well as grants to local and tribal public health agencies and contracts with community organizations to do outreach and sponsor vaccination clinics. A total of 770,021 Minnesotans have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, either at community sites, pharmacies, clinics, long-term care facilities, and other places. Of those, 370,981 have received both doses. The Minnesota Department of Health estimates that 13.8% of the state's population has received at least one dose, with 42.4% of seniors getting at least one shot. Health officials announced Wednesday that 761 new coronavirus infections were diagnosed. There were also 9 new deaths of COVID-19 complications. Those who died were between the ages of 55 and 94. The new cases came on testing volume of 19,822 tests. A total of 292 people were hospitalized, including 59 in intensive care, although hospitalizations have decreased significantly since the start of the year. This is a one-day increase. There was a one-day increase of 23 patients needing hospital-level care. Those with underlying health conditions, including obesity and diabetes, are more likely to need medical attention. I should mention as well on the coronavirus front, Target Corporation has announced that most of its employees will not return to its Twin Cities headquarters until this fall. The decision applies to Target's 12,000 Twin Cities headquarters employees working at its corporate campuses in downtown Minneapolis and Brooklyn Park. Employees were originally set to return in June, but Target spokesperson Sandra Tollefson says the decision to delay was made due to the continued impact of the coronavirus A small number of employees are still working at its two metro campuses. We continue to turn to public health experts for guidance on the coronavirus. Tollefson said, we are also closely monitoring the safety of downtown Minneapolis as we evaluate and adjust our plans. Tollefson says a hybrid model of at-home or on-site work will eventually be implemented for its headquarter employees as the pandemic threat diminishes. I'm glad you guys are putting signs into this. It's an interesting discussion. As I was walking today, having the discussion about how many jobs will not go back, how many jobs in America will forever be remote, or maybe mostly remote, say maybe three or four days a week from home. Probably some. I will say this, depending on which friend I talk to, there are still a lot of hard-ass bosses who, it's like I have one friend who's telling me that they have Zoom meetings, and that if God forbid a kid interrupts your Zoom meeting or a dog barks because the manager will say, "What's going on there? Can't you get the business?" And they'll just be angry. It's like, dude, man, you can't be like that. But there's a lot of people like that. There's a lot of people that basically are going to say, I want you to put your suit and tie on and get back into the office, because it's about control, not about what's best for the company. So my guess is about 60% of businesses are going to go back, because that's kind of the way they want it. But it's going to, even things are going to dramatically change from here on out. I guarantee it. Also, it's never too early to dream. Minnesota General Manager Jerry Hammer isn't ready to say the great Minnesota get-together is on for 2021, but he's encouraged by the vaccine rollout and recent herd immunity projections. The state of play, looking at what we know today and looking at trends and where we're headed, some outdoor events is certainly an expectation, Hammer said. The fair is still 6 months away, but planning ramps up in the spring. Last year, Hammer and his board of governors made a call to cancel in late May. Hammer and his staff are considering many options for 2021 fair, including a mask requirement and attendance limits. The dates, August 26th, December 6th, will not change, Hammer said. That's because vendors have scheduled travel across Minnesota and the nation. Governor Walz wouldn't commit to a timetable yesterday and decided on the fair and other large events, but he said he's also optimistic given the trajectory we're on. You hit these milestones. These are the types of activities that would come back, whether that's increased in capacity or the stadium at his stadium or looking at the state fair, he told reporters. The state fair brings in thousands of vendors who do everything from bake cookies to operate rides on the midway, sell kitchenware and lawnmowers. Many of those vendors were making a living almost exclusively on state and county fairs. Business was pretty much wiped out in 2020. The state fair surveyed those vendors in November. We had next to no fallout so far, at least anyway. Hammer is in regular contact with a group of state fair operators, Wisconsin, Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, and Iowa. The CEO of the Iowa State Fair said earlier this month, barring a significant resurgence of COVID, their festivities would be back. I do like the argument, and I have to agree with this argument wholeheartedly, that if you said, we'll have the state fair, but you have to be vaccinated. To get in, you have to have proof of vaccination. Once again, this is not the state fair is not a mandatory thing. There is nothing in the Constitution that says you have to be able to go get a pronto pup. There's nothing there. So you can sit there and say, it's not fair to us anti-vaxxers. Well, neither is science, but that never doesn't stop you. Da-da-da-da, boom. So if you did that, my gut feeling would be is the rate of vaccination would be the best in the country.
I was just thinking that, if we're having any trouble, just say vaccination to get into the state fair, we'll be fine in 2 weeks.
Jeez, inject me with that sweet, sweet vaccine and then inject me with a few Pronto Pops. There you go. Well, that didn't sound right. Anyway, no, you know where I'm going with that. Well, at least I hope you do. But no, I would agree. If you basically said, we'll have the state fair, but the only people that can get in have to show proof of vaccination at the gate. Wow. I guarantee you Minnesota there'd be fights at vaccination lines. I think maybe we don't do that because I'm concerned it will all of a sudden turn into a Wilmer Street intersection and, haymakers will be flying. At least I hope so. Final Minnesota coronavirus update story. Dr. Fauci was asked about what he thought was the hardest thing for him to understand about the coronavirus outbreak. And he said something that I agree with, and I've also not been able to understand, and that is the amount of Republicans who basically just do not care about their fellow man. And, you know, I as he said this, I had a friend, well, former friend, I'm going to be honest with you. Former friend who, he's one of these people that basically, you know, his whole point is don't let people know that 27 million Americans have survived coronavirus. Wow. That's your angle you're going with. Not the 500,000 dead, but basically the heck with the dead. Let's only focus on the 27 million. And yeah, 27 million people have survived. A lot of them have, we're probably going to have lifelong health problems because of this. Not to mention that there are many of them are still having health problems. And it's frustrating because, you know, this person, when they were confronted, they were asking, they were asked, where's your compassion for so many people's grief? There's nothing political about mourning, and pre-existing conditions do not lessen the grief of losing loved ones. Amen. And the response is just, it's just mind-numbing. Grief is a subjective emotion. You cried when your dad died, but others didn't. Dear Lord, you cold, heartless bastard. What is wrong with you, man? What is wrong with you? That is what you're, hey, your dad died. I didn't care. You know, really? That's your winning argument. I have no idea how these people got so jaded and so broken. I don't. 500,000 people died. And they sit there and they were old, they were sick. Well, they were humans. They were human beings. And they died. And many of them died. And many more got sick because of the mismanagement of this crisis by the Trump administration for nearly a year. A crisis, a disease, which, by the way, the accounts of what you hear what happened with Trump when he got sick almost killed him, for goodness sakes. They were thinking they might have to put him on a ventilator before they juiced him up with so many experimental drugs. I don't know what happened to us, but if I can say one thing about this specific friend who is now basically saying, you know, just because you grieve, no one else cares about death in your family, so just leave me alone. Dude, I can say this authoritatively, and I'm leaving names out of this because I don't want to go down this path. But I know 10 plus years ago, you had a horrible accident. And the outpouring of support for you during that time, concern, caring, compassion, was something that you yourself did appreciate at that time. So to see you, it's especially disappointing to see you at this point where you are dismissing and diminishing other people's grief when you yourself soaked it up like a sponge when you were in need. Grow up, get a heart, and stop being such a jackass. 952-946-6205. Power supply stuff, and then also, we'll see what else we get to as well before we get to the end of the show. It's the Matt McNeil Show. A reminder, Native Roots Radio, Paul, Robert Pilot and crew, they're up next right here on AM 950.
Everybody get up.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. State utility regulators are investigating how the big spike in natural gas prices last week could affect customers in Minnesota. Wholesale prices in many parts of the country rocketed to around 100 times normal as usual. Low temperatures both hampered production in southern states and led to a huge demand around most of the country. Well, I'll tell you what, it's the greedy jackass people that run these companies. There you go. This is not difficult, folks. It's the greedy jackass companies that have basically done everything to make us as much of a free market libertarian society as possible so they can jack up the prices to astronomical levels. That's what did it. No, that's what it is. Minnesota's largely made it through last week's cold snap, but their gas service, with their gas service uninterrupted, boilers and furnaces ran at full tilt. No problem here, but the state's big energy companies, Xcel and CenterPoint, told regulators on Tuesday they paid far more than expected to their own suppliers to keep the hydrocarbons flowing. The Public Utilities Commission meeting, Xcel's director of regulatory pricing and analysis said the company had predicted that the average residential consumer would burn about $50 worth of natural gas this month. The forecast was low. We're preliminarily thinking we incurred about $300 per residential customer to procure that natural gas and serve them. Now, once again, I appreciate Xcel Energy, CenterPoint Energy, keeping the energy going on. I don't necessarily think this is your fault. But what the hell are we doing? Ball Gazelka, hello, Paul. Hey, I know you're on your, you know, your rage, you know, excitement journey against the Minneapolis City Council. But can you basically come off your perceived little throne for a quick second there, Paul? Thank you very much. You know, why are we having to pay this? We winterized our weather. We've had no problems here. This wasn't our fault. Why are Minnesotans who did nothing wrong having to pay $300 for natural gas? That's per household, for God's sakes. The free market system, when it basically jacks up our prices six times the cost, when we have done nothing wrong, well, that's a broken system, because you shouldn't have that. If we've not done anything wrong, we winterized our windmills, we winterized our pipes, we winterized our heating systems, we winterized our water supplies, we didn't do anything wrong here. And this is not just Minneapolis, those big, bad, shitty people there, Paul. This is your district, too. They're going to get a $300 bill. Why are you not doing more about this? By the way, you probably could do a lot here by basically stopping that pipeline and building as many freaking windmills as you could, because you know what? The wind energy is pretty reliable if you winterize your windmill. I know someone needs to tell Texas. I know. But our windmills didn't stop here. But we weren't idiots who are basically betrothed to some corporate executive who's dealing out campaign contributions like they're playing seven-card stud in Vegas. Why are we suffering for Texas's Republican ignorance? It's not fair, and we should not be on the dime for this. And if we had a Republican leader in the Senate who actually had some caring for the citizens of Minnesota, maybe we wouldn't. But funny story, Paul Gazelka doesn't give a rat's butt about the people of this state. He doesn't. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.